Telling you, bro. What's been happening, bro?
Not too much.
Still hitting them arpeggios.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the Riff Raff. Greetings from sunny Southern California, more specifically North Hollywood, California. I'm here with actually rehearsing with Harry Shearer for his Derek Smalls Spinal Tap comeback tour. I'm only doing a couple shows, but a lot of fun. It's fun switching gears, putting on headphones and working on this podcast. Anyway, a couple of announcements. I am thinking of doing some t-shirts, Riff Raff t-shirts. Let me know if that's something you'd be into before I place an order. Maybe give me some feedback on that. And I got some other great shows coming up. As always, love all your support. Thanks again for all the emails. How do you land a gig with one of the icons of American music and keep it for 45 years? We'll ask today's guest, Mr. Mickey Raphael. Mickey's been playing with Willie Nelson for, almost 45 years. He's a really great, great harmonica player, great musician. You know, unless your name is Keith Richards, I don't know of anyone who has had a gig for as long as he has, much less on harmonica. Not only has Mickey been with Willie's band, along the way, he's also recorded and performed with many of the greats, and I'm talking about Neil Young, Leon Russell, Johnny Cash, Emmylou Harris, Paul Simon, Bob Dylan. It goes on and on and on. Look up his discography and his credits. In this interview, you'll hear Mickey and I first met about 15 years ago now, and we worked together on a few things here and there with Willie Nelson, including the uncredited part in the Dukes of Hazzard movie. Yeah, Mickey and I are on a flatbed truck playing with Willie. It's pretty funny. But in this interview, we discuss his early years, how he landed the gig with Willie. He's got some good stories about different sessions and classic records he's been on with Emmylou Harris and one of my personal favorites, Teatro, with Daniel Lanois, produced Willie Nelson, and also Redhead Stranger, famous, famous Willie Nelson album. Great Miles Davis stories, just funny. Great time. So hope you enjoy this. And I'm walking into Mickey's studio here in his house in Nashville. And we just play a little impromptu intro jam and get right to it. Thanks for tuning in.
That's cool, Shane.
A little E, something, what do we call that?
Something in E.
Yeah, something in E. Bellevue Blues. All right, I'm sitting in Nashville, Tennessee with my good friend Mickey Raphael. And man, one of the rare times you're actually in
town. I'm home. Yeah.
You're home and I'm here. Man, it's so great to have you as a guest. And for those of you that don't know, I mean, a lot of people know who you are, Mickey. You got your own t-shirt here. Mickey's been a long, long time member of Willie Nelson's band for over 40 years.
Yeah,
right?
Since 1973.
Man. I mean, you stop and think about that for a minute. Like, how many people on any instrument have a gig that long? I mean, that's like beyond tenured, man. That's two careers right there.
Yeah, well, I'm fortunate every day. I mean, I don't take any of it for granted. But I think Willie, you know, that's why the group's called Willie and Family, because it kind of is a family. I mean, how are you going to fire your sister?
Right, you know? Right.
And I always thought, it's like, it's not that he's kept me, you know, that he's kept me on so long because I'm, you know, such a great musician. I just didn't think he had the balls to fire me.
I don't know about that. You are a great, great, great player, man. And you've graced the many, many hundreds and hundreds of records. Like, still, right now, I come over to Mickey's place. He's working on a track for a producer. And, you know, I've gotten the opportunity to work with you, play with Willie, you know, and we'll get into that stuff. But I think the thing that's unique about you is, I've noticed, I think you're, correct me if I'm wrong, I think you're sort of the unofficial MD for Willie. Like, maybe not called MD, but anytime you see Willie, if you look to the right, you'll see Mickey.
Yeah, I mean, I've been fortunate, you know, when he does these one-offs, or we'll do a TV show or you know, something. We did the Grammys, and, you know, they brought me along, and I was able to put together, you know, a studio band out there of, you know, some of my favorite LA cats or something like that, or New York guys to, you know, augment, you know, to play with Willie. So it's always fun to have that opportunity and be able
I've
to work with different guys.
With U2 and Neil Young and God, I mean, list goes on and on and on. And I'll tell the listeners briefly how we met. It was on an airplane.
Yeah,
actually.
It was a plane.
It was, I don't remember.
You were playing with
years.
The Nevilles.
I don't know how many years ago, but I had my tour itinerary open, I think. And I think you said, you work with the Neville Brothers? Oh, and we start talking. Your mom's from New Orleans, is that right?
Yeah, my mom's from New Orleans.
Yeah. And I went to one of your birthday parties in Nashville. There's a photographer friend of yours that had hosted.
Yeah, Jack Spencer. That's right. We still do that. That's probably been, I don't know, 20 years since... we have these yearly Christmas birthday parties.
Wow, yeah. Well, that and then we, you know, hung out. Anytime you come to New Orleans, we'd hang. And I don't know, man. And then one day you call. One day Mickey calls me. He's like, Willie's looking for I need a band to back up Willie for the Dukes of Hazzard movie. So we did that together. We were on camera together.
Yeah,
with Willie.
Yeah. That was fun.
You remember when Willie was, what was that tune? They call me the Breeze.
Yeah, the JJKL.
Or it was Skinner, right? Wasn't this, or Skinner's version was the one Willie did for the movie?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And you remember that scene when we shot the scene? Was it Jessica Simpson? There was a huge, like, square dance scene. Remember
yeah, were
that?
We on a flatbed truck?
We were on
a plane
flatbed truck.
With hay bales.
And they had to queue up, like, 100 people and get ready, and the director would say, and the line was Willie had to say, "Hey, fellas, how about a tune?" And we're like, yeah, Willie, what do you want to play? And he goes, "How about They Call Me the Breeze?" That was the
yeah,
tune.
Yeah, right.
But Willie never got the line right. So he would say, "How about I Am the Breeze?" So we'd start playing. Everybody's dancing. And all of a sudden, cut.
They had to set up and do it
all over again, like three times, man. But anyway.
I think it's the last time I played sitting on a hay bale.
I remember standing next to you and Willie, and I asked Willie about Trigger, his guitar, and I said, Willie, how long has you had that guitar? And he said, oh, about 40 years. And I said, man, if that thing could talk. And he said, oh, I'd have to shoot it.
Yeah.
But anyway, man, that's a little of our background history, and we've recorded together with some people. We worked for Ben Keith and some other people together, and but, you know, I've always been a fan before I knew you. When I was a little kid, man, I had this record, Redheaded Stranger.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I was a 10
years
old.
That was the
old.
First record I played.
I want to ask you about that, because tell me if this is urban legend, or if this is true, I've heard that Willie recorded all that stuff and submitted it to the record company, and they said, oh, these are great demos. We need to put strings on
them. Yeah, that's true. They said, in fact, it was the first record that Willie did for CBS where he was producing it. And his contract, his deal was that he could turn in the record and they'd have to put it out. So we cut this record, I think just a day and a half, maybe a couple of days. And it was the wow. first time we'd heard any of these songs. Willie comes in with a stack of napkins and says, really? Here's my next record. And he starts playing the songs. And the record is so sparse, the production is so sparse, because we're hearing the songs for the first time and, you know, listen to it once. And then he played it again and we'd play a little bit along with him. And that was really the takes that we'd use. So he turned it in and they said, it's great demo. Great demo, but, you know, we can put these strings on here and these voices. Well, he goes, no, you know, that's my deal. And they said, well, tell you what, we'll produce it our way. And then your next record, you can do the way you want. Well, this is no deal. This is, his manager went to bat, said, this is the contract we've got. And they had to put it out. And then, you know, the rest is history.
It's such a great record, man.
Demo. I remember that.
So that's true. Wow, that's really interesting. I still have that.
Well, it's not what was going on. You know, everything was so overproduced at that time. I mean, that was what people, that's what, you know, was coming out of Nashville, not to say anything bad about it, but that was the style of record production back then. It was real, lots of vocals and, pretty heavily produced tracks. So this is really unique that you just go in there, number one, with the road band, you know, that was not seasoned studio musicians.
Right.
You know, or to call Willie not a seasoned musician is kind of contrary, but it worked out good.
Someday when we meet up yonder, we'll stroll hand in hand again in a land that knows no parting, blue eyes crying in the rain.
You know, you told me one time, and I never forgot that, you said, like you went to LA and Willie, you hired some guys and you got Keltner and you got these other guys to play with Willie. And you said, Willie, you know, listen how great this sounds, man. It's so steady and it's this and that. And man, this is so killer. And Willie, he told you, I know, but those other guys are my friends.
Yeah, he said, Keltner was wanting to go on the road with us. And it's like, hey, what if we take Jimmy out for a while? He goes, oh, that'd be great. He goes, but, you know, sometimes it's better to be just surrounded by your friends than the best musicians in the world.
That's a beautiful thing, man. I mean, who does that nowadays? I mean, it's
yeah.
You know, that's really.
And he really loves the road. I mean, that line in On the Road Again, you know, making music with my friends, that's true. I mean, that's what he does. Yeah. That's why he keeps touring, you know, at 84, 85, probably 100 cities a year, because he's just, you know. Somebody asked him, when are you going to retire? He goes, all I do is play music and golf. Which one am I going to quit?
Good morning, America, how are you? Say, don't you know me? I'm your native son. I'm the rain they call the city of New Orleans. And I'll be gone 500 miles when the day is done.
Yeah, I never even asked, how did you get the gig with Willie?
Well, I was at the right place at the right time. I think I was playing with B.W. Stevenson, who was kind of folky singer. I was involved in that Texas folk scene with Michael Murphy, Jerry Jeff, Ray Wiley Hubbard, you know, those Texas songwriters. And I got a call from Daryl Royal, who was the coach of the University of Texas football team. And he's a real strong patron of the arts and a music supporter. And he was a friend of Willie's. So he said, we're having a little picking party after the ball game. I think at Texas, the Longhorns were playing Arkansas that weekend. And I was in Dallas at my folks' house. And he said, hey, you know, after the game, why don't you come over and bring your harmonicas and we'll have a, we're having a little picking party and some of my friends are there. And so I went, and I mean, I knew nothing about football. I knew who the coach was because, you know, he was probably the most popular guy in Texas.
Right.
And Willie was there, and Charlie Pride was there, and probably about 30 people in the hotel room. And they passed the guitar around. A couple other singer-songwriters were in the room. And I didn't know who Willie was. I had one of his records because we were on RCA, and I'd gone through the vault and, you know, taken a bunch of records. And I took... I saw this one Willie record called Willie and Family, and the album cover was so weird. It was a photograph taken on Willie's farm in Ridgetop, Tennessee, around a bonfire, and all the band and family were standing around this fire. And they were so weird looking. Paul, the drummer, was wearing a they're out in the woods, and he's wearing a black cape and red patent leather boots. B, the bass player, looked like he was wearing a fuzzy diaper.
It's like some kind of Texas P-funk.
Oh, it was so weird looking. And I said, I got to have this record. So that was Willie. And later, I asked him, I brought that record out, or I said, who are all these people? I mean, I could recognize Willie's sister and some of the grandbabies and, you know, some of the guys in the band. It's like, well, who is this guy? And they go, we don't know. He just walked up out of the woods. We were taking the picture and he just got in the picture.
But, wow.
And that's true. So Willie, you know, would get the guitar and he'd play Crazy or Nightlife, you know, in the coach's room. And it's like, ah, so that's who this guy is. Because I think I'd recognize those songs from Aretha's version or, you know, Ray Charles or B.B. King doing Nightlife. And, you know, I was just kind of jamming with my harmonica. I really didn't know what to do. And Willie says, hey, if you ever hear we're playing anywhere, come sit in with us. And a few weeks later, they were playing in a high school gymnasium of a benefit for a volunteer fire department. So I just drove down there and showed up and sat in with them. And I think we played Fraulein four times that night just because it was what people wanted to dance to, you know, something you could two-step to. So here we are set up on the basketball court, you know, at this high school in Lancaster, Texas.
Man, and how old were you, like 18 or something?
No, I was probably 20. I just turned 20.
Well,
20. Yeah. But we went to a truck stop afterwards for breakfast. You know, it's probably 1 in the morning. And I think Lancaster is 30, 40 miles south of Dallas. So went to this truck stop, and we're talking, and it's Willie and Paul, and I can't remember if Bobby, his sister, was there. But, you know, we had breakfast, your chicken fried steak, which you have in the middle of the night. It's pretty normal. And I was getting ready to leave. It was getting late, and I thought, well, I'm going to have one more cup of coffee. And I did, and then Willie says, well, hey, you know, we're going to New York in a couple of weeks. Why don't you go with us? And they were going up there to play Max's Kansas City.
Oh, wow, yeah.
So that, if I hadn't have stayed for that cup of coffee, I don't know what I'd be doing.
Fate would have led a different, and here it is.
Yeah, like, still, and I'm still all coffeed up, you know.
Georgia.
Most people listening to this would know this, but Willie wrote Crazy for Patsy Cline. He wrote a lot of country songs.
Hello Walls.
Hello Walls. Young. Hello, yeah. But his deal was he wanted to be an artist, man, and people didn't really take him seriously in Nashville at the time.
Yeah, they wanted his songs. They didn't want him to sing. They didn't want to hear him sing.
It's like early 60s, right?
Yeah.
And so he just got frustrated and went back to Texas and just... But decided
he started playing there and started playing, you know, dance halls and
grew his hair long and started smoking weed or whatever. And then,
yeah, well, I think, you know, he came back to Austin and he saw how when he would play these gigs there, that his audience were hippies. You know, this is back in the late 60s, early 70s, hippies and rednecks. So here, music was a catalyst to bring these two groups together peacefully. I mean, it was the end of the Vietnam War. And, you know, there's a lot of tension between those two social...
Sure, especially in Texas.
Oh, yeah. You know, so here was, you know, he was playing places like the Armadillo World Headquarters, you know, it was a hippie crowd, and then Big G's, you know, which there'd be, you know, it was one of those blood and bucket places, you know, we'd go in there and there'd be fights. And wow. I remember we played there one time, or the first time we played, at the time we didn't have a bus, so everybody was driving their own cars, but I had to wait till Willie and Paul got there before I could go in the place because I had real long hair.
Wow.
And really? There wasn't any way I was going to be able to walk into that joint by myself.
Don't shoot the harmonica player. I know there's a lot of Willie stories. You've told me some, but for the purpose of this podcast, are there any like crazy G-rated Willie stories that, you know, you tell? Like, you don't have to say some the craziest shit you can think of that is palatable for the podcast.
Yeah, one that stands out.
You can say anything you want. I don't care, but I know you don't want to.
No, one that stands out is that we were in Northern California playing a festival at a racetrack, and I remember being on the hotel, being on Willie's bus, and we hear this thunderous roar, and about 10 Hells Angels, you know, on their bikes, pull up, park by the bus, and knock on the door, and they wanted to meet Willie because they saw the bus there. So Willie comes out and meets these guys and visits with them, and it's, you know, he talks to them for a little bit. And then he says, hey, guys, I got to go. You know, we got to go to the gig. And they said, well, come on, we'll take you. So wow. Willie and I got on the back of their bikes, and we're going down the I guess it was the 5. Usually the 5 is a 101, I guess. But it was about a 20-mile ride.
Wow.
You know, and these guys don't pack other men on their bus on their bikes very often.
It was a little awkward.
Yeah, it was a little awkward, you know. But and I remember I was riding with a guy, Deacon, who was president of the Oakland chapter of the Hells Angels.
Well, those were the guys that were, that was the Rolling Stones guys. Thing, right?
Yeah.
The Oakland?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, yeah, the Oakland. Yeah,
holy
yeah. From Altamont.
The Grateful Dead or something? Or,
yeah, a few years prior.
So
I mean, before that.
The Stones or...
But this guy was so big, I didn't smoke, but I could have lit a cigarette behind him and the wind never would have gotten me, you know, because this guy was blocking all the wind. And I figured, man, if I'm ever going to be safe, if I'm ever going to get on a bike, this is the way to do it. So we rode to the gig, pulled up to the backstage entrance, and there's a guard there, a guard check. And the guard comes out and goes, you know, you guys can't come in here. And the front bike pulls up and says, you know, this is Willie Nelson. He's playing here. And the cop goes, yeah, sure it is. And Willie had to pull out his American Express card. So don't leave home without it.
Really? The cop didn't even recognize
him? No, not at all. Well, you know, we'd been pretty windblown too, you know.
But,
and he didn't expect to see him, you know, with a bunch of Hell's Angels.
Man.
And Willie blended right in back then.
Did you do the Highwaymen stuff with like Bob Ray? Remember Bob Ray, the bass player?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Well, I'm sure you were there.
Yeah, he was in the second incarnation of the band. Yeah, it was Mike Leach and Gene Chrisman the first time. But then, yeah, Bob was on the second.
That must have been
tour.
Great because I watch YouTube stuff of that sometimes. And, you know, Chris Christopherson and Waylon. I mean, man, that was like.
Yeah, there's a box set. I have to get you one. There's a box set that I produced that was, it was a recording. It was a DVD of a show that we did at Nassau Coliseum in 93. And then I remixed it in surround.
Really?
And then there's a 2-CD set, too.
Really? And that must have been a great experience.
Oh, yeah. It was fun doing it because we took everything down. You know, just had all the multi-tracks and just took everything down to zero and then just built everything back. You know, cleaned up the track so there wasn't a lot of noise. Because we didn't have the technology when we recorded this thing in 93, you know, what they've got in the studio now for, you know, just clean recordings is amazing. So we just took every track and just made it really nice and clean. Didn't change anything, you know, just made sure that if you heard Willie's vocal, you weren't getting Waylon's guitar through the same track.
Right.
You know, so
isolation a little bit. And
And it's in a 15,000 seat arena, and it sounds, you know, really good. So it's a great, and it looks good too. So
wow, I didn't even know about that.
Yeah, they recut the John Small, who did all the Billy Joel videos, and Garth Brooks videos, recut the film, and then I did the audio for it.
And thanks for coming out to the show. I usually introduce this song by saying, "Hello, I'm Johnny Cash," but you already knew that. I hear the train a-coming, it's rolling around the bend. I ain't seen the sunshine since I don't know when.
I'm stuck in Folsom Prison, and time keeps dragging on. But that train keeps a rolling on down to San Antonio. When I was just a baby, my mama told me, son.
Let's talk about some of your influences, man, your harp influences. You know, I could talk about Willie all day, but you know, I want to hear more about your background and stuff too. I didn't even know all this stuff. So, who's Charlie McCoy? Maybe
Charlie McCoy. Yeah, from this is what got me into listening to country music. You know, mm-hmm. There's nobody plays like him because he was playing on all those country, you know, recordings. So I listened to Charlie. I really wasn't heavily into the blues, but I love Paul Butterfield, and I met Paul. Mm. You know, several years before he passed, and we spent a lot of time together. So he was a big influence. I mean, his tone was just amazing. And then I liked the acoustic players, you know, like Slim Harpo, of course, Little Walter. But I love the acoustic players. Slim Harpo, Lazy Lester, who's still around, Sonny Boy Williamson. So I liked
you play chromatic harp too, right?
A little. I'm really not a chromatic player, but I play a little
but
bit.
But you've got all that stuff and the bass harmonicas and all that.
Bass harmonicas.
You were just putting a track on.
I mean,
on,
you can see, and this is my little recording room here. Yeah. And accordions. I mean, my favorite instrument's the accordion.
I didn't know that. Really?
Yeah, so I've got that. That's Mark Savoy. I have a Mark Savoy. That one was made by Sydney.
I have one that looks kind of like that I got.
Yeah, that's a Cajun one. Then I've got the ones that Hunter makes that are the three rows mm-hmm. that are like the Tex-Mex kind of stuff that I started taking lessons from Joel Guzman, who plays with Paul Simon.
Okay. Yeah, those old Cajun ones, they use the Italian reeds, I think, in those. And they.
Yeah, and this one right here was made in the guy's...
That looks a lot like mine, man. That really does. A lot of those guys out in Lafayette and stuff, they're like cabinet builders and stuff, and they build accordions on the side.
Not going to get any work on this thing. Yeah. Oh, here it is, Sidney Brown. Played by Sidney Brown.
Look at that. Yeah.
What's that Bobby Charles song? Oh, no, it's not Bobby Charles song. Tennessee Blues.
I don't know it. I don't know this song.
Anyway, I love the sound of these things.
Yeah, man. Beautiful. I didn't know you played accordion.
I don't. Well, it's just something I play in the privacy of,
I see.
You know.
Now you've recorded with, I mean, it's got to be 1,000 records you've played on. A lot of, you know, we were talking earlier. I knew you had worked with Motley Crue. But I didn't know it was Smoking in the Boys' Room.
Yeah.
Man, you played harp on that.
Yeah, because I think Vince Neil was trying to get was going to play it, and he just didn't have the chops to do the solo.
Uh-huh.
So Tom Werman, who was their producer, called me. He and Tommy Lee were kind of taking over at that point. So they were my keepers in the studio, my handlers anyway. So... I went in and played it, and I think Vince ended up playing like a lick at the very end, and he got Heavy Metal Instrumentalist of the Year award.
Yeah. Oh, man.
And on the album, it says, you know, harmonica Vince Neil. Then at the really tiny letters, it says additional harmonica Mickey Raphael.
Yeah,
But yeah, that's one of my favorite
hopefully
solos.
Hopefully you got some additional money for that.
Oh.
Yeah.
There's a truck on its way over now.
Yeah, that's what happens when you go. It's called ghost sessions. A lot of those guys did, you know. At least you got credit on. I can I think of that song in my head right now. I can hear that harmonica solo. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I remember that. Ain't
no
excuse. Oh, ain't no excuse. Ain't no
excuse.
you were living in Malibu for a long time.
Yeah,
were you
I was out there off and on for years, and I had an apartment, little apartment at the beach.
Okay.
That I kept. So I got a few, you know, I did the Motley Crue session out there. It's an Elton John record out there. Blue Oyster Cult. So I was getting a lot of rock records. I wasn't getting any country sessions, you know.
But you had played with Emmylou before that.
Yeah, so. Well, that's when I first moved out there and stayed at the house that they were recording. That was a studio that she and her husband, Brian Ahern, husband at the time, Brian had. And they moved out, and myself and one of the engineers took over the house. So it was this beautiful kind of sprawling ranch house in Beverly Hills with a semi-truck in the driveway that was the Enactron truck. It was their studio.
Wow.
So they run all the cables into the house, and I would set up in the shower, in the guest bathroom shower, where I recorded all Emmylou's, the records I played on for Emmylou.
Now, what would be some highlights of those sessions?
Here, There, and Everywhere. Quarter Moon in a 10-Cent Town, Easy From Now On.
Wow.
It's gonna be easy. It's gonna be easy. It's gonna be easy from now on.
And Stardust, all of Stardust of Willie.
You are in my arms. The nightingale tells his fairy tale of paradise where roses grew. And though I dreamed in vain, in my heart there always will remain.
Yeah. And I remember being in there one time. I wasn't on the session. I forget who was playing on this session, but I was like in my back bedroom, and Duck Dunn was playing bass, and Mac was playing piano.
Wow.
And it was like, you know, so all night long I'm hearing this. I don't remember who the drummer was. I don't think it was Keltner. But it was, you know, I hear this kick all night, and it's like, I can't complain.
Yeah, you know? Man. Wow, that's a great memory. I remember going to the Ryman Auditorium in Nashville. I'm sure you were there. It was Willie, and it was a bunch of guests. It was a long time ago because Norah Jones she hadn't exploded yet, but she was there.
Mm-hmm.
Bon Jovi was there.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And Richards.
Aaron Neville was there. And Keith Richards was in the house band. Remember that?
Yeah.
So I was hanging with Aaron and you, and I'm at the rehearsal watching, and they did Stardust rehearsal.
Uh-huh.
And man, it was so terrible. It was like, Willie, I was like, man, what is he playing? It's his song, like the solo, it was like really
bad. He didn't play the solo on, let's see, I think Grady Martin may have played.
Well, he tried to play it that day, and it was really bad. And then at the end, Aaron like hit this note, he goes, oh, and Willie leans into the mic, he's like, he tried to harmonize.
Oh, no.
And I was like, holy shit, how are they going to pull this off? This was rehearsal that day.
Yeah.
And that night, when they did it, man, it was it gave me goosebumps. It was unbelievable. Willie played this solo. I saw Aaron like just grin. Like it sounded like Django reincarnated.
Yeah.
It was so beautiful. I'm like, what happened between then and that? You know? But I remember
that's
that.
Why he hates to rehearse, because you know it's like it's never gonna be like. You know, it's a waste to rehearse with him. You know, maybe a rehearsal for Willie is good just so he get an idea when to come in, when to stop playing, and when to start.
Yeah.
You know, that's it. But he's just great on a first take. That day, you know, you can't smoke at the Ryman, and it's a, you know, kind of a, it's like smoking in church. Mm-hmm. So nobody's smoking. There's signs all over the place. And I remember during the rehearsals, Keith Richards walks out to the center of the stage and stood in that spot where Hank Williams stood. And he's just kind of looking around and just getting, you know, just taking in the whole vibe of the place. And I see him out of the corner of my eye, and he pulls out a cigarette, lights up right there.
Of course
he did. Yeah, and the place, the roof didn't cave in. So at that point, when Keith is lighting up a cigarette, everybody else lit up. And if I had had a cigarette, I'd have probably lit one too.
I remember Keith dropping something else on stage, but yeah. I probably shouldn't mention that. But yeah, that was funny, man. Let's talk. I want to hear about your memories of the record Teatro, which I love that record. Yeah. And it's Daniel Lanois produced it. And I don't know how you feel about that record.
No, I love it. It's one of my favorites.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Just working with Daniel because I love the sounds he gets. And it was in an old movie theater in Oxnard, California. And the screen was still there. So while we were playing, they would have, with the sound off, they'd have these Mexican movies going on with all this.
Because it was a movie theater called the Teatro.
And the board was, it was just one big room. There were some movie seats still there. But mainly one big room with real heavy furniture. Instead of baffles between the instruments, you'd have a big velvet couch and big velvet chairs that we were all set up around. And Daniel wanted us to play not our main instruments. So Willie, I don't think, even played trigger. I think he had electric guitar that was Dylan's guitar. Might have been a Gibson ES-335 mm-hmm. or something like that. Bobby played electric piano. There was one drum kit. And Victor Andrizio played... what's Tony's last name?
Is he drummer or bass player?
No, he's a utility guy, keyboard and writer. Oh. But Victor was a drummer, and Tony, kill me that I can't remember his last name. So they had one drum kit, mm-hmm. and the two of them broke this drum kit up and played it together, which was just the coolest feel. And then Brad Meldow was who's an incredible jazz pianist, played vibes and a little piano too. Tony Mangurian.
Oh, okay, sure. Yeah. I read in Lanois' book that it was actually filmed.
Well, we did it, and we did the record, and then they wanted to film it, so Vim Vendors came back with a film crew, and we did the whole record again on film. The record had already come out, I think, but we staged the whole thing, and they had these Spanish dancers to dance on the stage that were backlit, so all you saw were these shadows behind the scrim, and Harry Dean Stanton was there, and he would dance, and it was very cool. And I think, and they made a video of it, but I think that might have been musically better than the original. Wow. But it was about, you know, we did everything the same, but it was just might
so
have been,
somewhere that footage is sitting, existing.
Yeah, well,
somewhere.
It's on. I think you can get it's on VHS. It never came out on the DVD.
Oh, so it came out. I didn't know that.
You might could find it, you know, on the line somewhere.
I have to look for that.
On YouTube, yeah.
Favorite track off that record?
God, I don't know. You know, Daniel said, play an instrument you're not comfortable with. So I played bass harp mostly. There's very little harmonica. I mean, the diatonic harp.
He said, play an instrument you're not comfortable. Get you out of your comfort zone.
We're all out of our comfort zone, yeah. With Willie not playing trigger most of the time. That was really interesting. And then the board was set up right in the center. So we're listening back to mixes. I mean, we're listening back, you know, to playback, that was the mix.
Yeah.
They never went back there and mixed the record. What we heard at that time, Howard was the engineer.
Yeah.
I mean, that was it.
I've heard that about Lanois, like he's kind of part of the musician. He's in the room, like vibing off everything. He's right in the center. And while you're playing, he's interacting and he's making changes on the fly. And that's kind of it. You know,
that was it. 3 Days is a great track on that.
3 days that I hate to see arrive. 3 days that I hate to be alive. 3 days filled with tears and sorrow. Yesterday, today.
Still play through that old Baldwin amp?
Oh, yeah. We've got several of them because they keep falling apart. Yeah, the Baldwin amp with the stereo amp with a stereo pickup on that Martin
Yeah. And Willie doesn't even know. He can't remember half the people that signed Trigger, probably, right? There's so many signatures on there.
Well, he'd have to look at it. Yeah, and it's, some of it's getting worn off, you know. Roger Miller and Leon Russell signed it. I'm sure Merle signed it. Christofferson.
I've gotten, you know, actually a few inches from Trigger. I've never actually, I don't remember if I actually picked it up, because it was sitting on a stand one day with some gig, and I thought, man, this is like Smithsonian.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
It'd be interesting to see where it goes eventually.
Well, probably Smithsonian, or somebody with a ton of money will, I don't know. Willie probably wouldn't let that happen. I don't know. Can you tell me a Miles Davis story? I know you were, you know, a lot of people probably don't realize, but Miles was a huge Willie Nelson fan, right? And when you lived in Malibu, you were... Mickey's getting up right now and pulling a photo off the wall.
We were in Vegas, and Miles came out to see Willie. And every night... I was hanging out in his room, and he says, I'm going to write Willie's song. So he takes takes a laundry list. We're at Caesar's Palace. Takes a laundry list, draws some staff lines on it, and starts writing some notes and stuff. And he says, heck with it. And he wads it up, throws it in the trash, goes to the bathroom. So as soon as he left the room, I dove in the trash and grabbed it. And I couldn't get him to sign. I couldn't say, hey, Miles, I went through your trash. Will you sign this, please?
Wow.
But that's the...
expect me around some...
Whatever you may do or something like that. You know,
it's got chord changes on it, and it's got some musical notation on it. It looks like a shorthand.
You'll have to play those, kind of just scribbled ideas.
Yeah, and he's got some chord changes on it.
And then we played there a couple of weeks, and he spent a week with us, and he sat on the side of the stage every night, and on my side, which was even, you know... pretty scary just to have him watching there. And he walked over to me, I think it was the first or second night, and picked up one of my harmonicas and says, man, how do you play this thing? And the cigarette girl, you know, selling cigars, uh-huh. cigarettes, Tipperellos, and a camera. She came by, and Miles has picked up a harmonica.
Oh, there he is. He's playing
and,
your harp.
She took a picture of Miles and I cheek to cheek playing harmonica.
Oh, man, that's cool. Wow, look at that.
No, that's me. And that's Miles is wearing a Willie hat.
Oh yeah, that's a great photo.
No, I thought we were in Tokyo, and just sitting in the hotel, and all of a sudden it's one of these hotels with the lobby with the floors go up 50 floors, and it's just atrium lobby, and we're sitting down there. I think we're waiting for our ride to go to the gig, and we hear echoing through the hall. It goes, Willie, hey Willie. It's T-Bone. T-Bone Walk, wow. Who was the bass player for Hall & Oates.
Yeah.
You know, hey, Willie, it's T-Bone. It's like he's going, who the hell is T-Bone? Willie's thinking that. You know, hey, T-Bone, you know.
Man, I've gotten the opportunity to go on Willie's bus a few times, and it's got what they like to... the Western scene paintings and stuff, and he had
the Western
Channel
the
whole time, and it was cool.
It's either that or CNN. So
all right, and then another time, I don't remember whose bus. If it wasn't Willie, but your tour manager Pooty, rest in peace. He had me and my wife on the bus, and he had this pulls out this blue mason jar, and he's like,
"Oh, moonshine,
take a sip of this,
something.
Honey. This is the best South Carolina moonshine you ever had."
Yeah.
Yeah, man. Anyway.
The good old days.
The good old days. Well.
Yeah, it's got a little more sedate out there on the road now. I mean, I guess just to make it this long, you've got to slow the pace down and sleep every once in a while.
Yeah. Well, to keep that sort of pace, man. I mean, because Willie doesn't fly, right? It's just all...
No, he doesn't. I mean, he lives in Hawaii, so he's got to fly there. But he'll take the bus to L.A. and then catch a plane.
There's a drummer who was on my podcast named Kirk Covey. He's a great drummer. He played in this fusion band named Tribal Tech. He bought Bobby's house on the golf course.
Oh, he did? Oh,
he
really?
He lives in that house. And one of these podcast episodes was recorded in that house.
Oh, no kidding. Yeah. Who's he play with?
Well, he's just like a freelance drummer. Uh-huh. He used to be in this fusion band called Tribal Tech, and he played with Joe Zawinul for a little while too.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. No kidding.
But he said this was Bobby Helson's house.
So he's out there.
House.
I'll have to track him down.
Yeah. So I've been to that house a few times.
Yeah.
It's a nice place.
Yeah, well, that's where the studio is. That's where Willie's studio is at the golf course at Pedernales.
Yeah,
I mean, we still do stuff there. I mean, we'll cut tracks here and then, you know, take them to Austin and Willie put his guitar and vocal on there.
Now, you've worked with Bob Dylan too, right?
I didn't. Well, I've played with him. We've done some stuff, some live shows, you know, tribute shows where he was on the show. And then he one that we did, he asked me to play his harp part. I mean, there was a, I mean, I would mostly refer to him, let him play, you know, but he'd asked me to play this one, on this one song where he played it on the record, but you know, I played live. And then we toured with him for several years.
Right.
So, but I never played with him live after that, but he was having trouble with his harp. So he called me over one time to kind of, something was wrong with the reeds or the harp was sticking. So I got him playing a different model. I think I switched into the Hohner, the Special 20, because it's got a plastic comb and the wood, it doesn't swell when it gets you know, wet or anything.
Remember that time you came over to my house and I was trying to play harp a little bit and I had a marine band and you were showing me a few things and you told me that those reeds are a little harder to bend, right? If you're a beginner, is that right?
Well, the blues harps I thought was a harp? Little, yeah. I love the marine band. I mean, that's what I play. But yeah, I think for somebody just starting out, and it's what I use in the studio too, is a Special 20s.
Special 20.
Which is a plastic body. I still like the wood, you know, is my favorite. And the ones I record with are, it's a Hohner, but it's customized by a guy named Joe Felisco, who's a great harmonica player and historian, and was one of the first, probably the first, you know, guy that built custom harmonicas.
You must have, what, 1,000 harmonicas, probably?
I mean, I've got a small kit. I mean, this is, there's probably 1,000 harmonicas here, and here's the recording kit, which is 12.
Okay, so that's right that's your case that's you bring to a session.
Kit. But some of the others are like bass harmonicas or chord harmonicas. There's harmonicas in minor tunings and major seventh tunings.
When you're on the road, do you like scour, you know, antique stuff?
No, because I don't collect anything. Okay. I don't like old shit.
Especially old harmonicas. That's
old harmonicas,
really the best. Do you have, you did a solo record, but it's a long time ago, right?
Yeah, I did a record called Hand to Mouth. That was just, it was back in the 80s. And it was this keyboard player and Ben Keith who played steel.
We knew Ben. You know, we worked with Ben.
Yeah.
I mean, it's another rest in peace, unfortunately.
Yeah. So we just turned on the tape machines and just played.
Are you working on any of your own stuff now?
I'm not working. I need to. I mean, I'm not. We cut a track.
We did.
You know, in New Orleans. I need to probably do another record. I just need some direction. So, you want to do something?
Yeah, man. I'm going to actually find that track. I'm sure I have it on a hard drive somewhere. And maybe if it's okay with you, I'll paste in a little taste of that.
Joey Burns from Calexico, and we went in to his studio, and
that was the same time. I remember you talking about Calexico.
And then I did, Tony Scher, who lives in New York, who plays with Bill Frisell.
Sure, I know Tony.
He and I cut Spanish Harlem in his house. So I've got a few things. I need to do another.
He should. It sounds like you already have something.
Got enough, almost. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and this thing I'm working on with Tucker Martin. Great producer. He does My Morning Jacket, The Decemberists. I might just have to, and it's an instrumental piece he just sent me. I might just have to steal it.
Just hit him up, man. Hit up a few friends to do some tracks and you blow.
Yeah, I'll just take his track and just drown everything out with harmonica.
Yeah. Well, you're one of the, like, you know, you're one of the good harmonica players. Sometimes, I got to say, like, sometimes at the blues jams, I mean, guitar players are totally guilty of that, but sometimes you get harp players that they cut in and they grab the mic and it's, you know, they're outside the stage like salivating to jump on stage when they get their chance. Can't blame them, but
you know, but somebody asked me one time, would I do a workshop or would I teach harmonica? And it's like, I'm not a great teacher, and no, I can't teach you how to play, but I can teach you how to not play. I think that's almost more important. I can teach you where to lay out, you know. Which
that'll
is,
get your gigs, or it'll keep you on a gig for sure. That's a pretty wise thing right there. Simple. I mean,
it's almost harmonica players do have a bad rap. When I've spent some time with Mac Rebenek, and he goes, man, he goes, Mickey, he goes, I love you. He goes, I hate the harmonica, but I love you.
That's true. I haven't heard much harmonica on Mac's records. You know, Mac is Dr. John, for those of you that don't know.
Yeah, you haven't heard any yet. Maybe soon.
Maybe soon. I might have a little something to do with that, actually. We'll see. Man, you want to play one more little thing or something? I don't know.
Is that a bad harp key? I mean, a guitar key?
Whatever you want. What do you want me to play? This is a funky little guitar here. An old Larrabee. A little baby Larrabee. Did you ever get into Toots Thielemans?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, man.
Again, I met him when he was playing with Paul Simon. We did a show with him. And he comes over and picks up, you know, because I play the diatonic, the little 10-hole harmonicas, and he plays, chromatic. Yeah. But he picked up my little 10-hole harmonica, and he goes, how do you play this little thing? And he picked it up, and it was like me trying to play chromatic. I mean, he can do no wrong, but it wasn't his instrument, you know. And it's
how do you drive the stick shift?
How do you play this thing?
He's a beautiful player. I love his stuff.
Oh, yeah.
The tune Bluesette. I played that on a podcast with another friend of mine. All right, Mickey, I think I have enough, man.
All right, well, thank you.
Thank you for making the time, and you know, it's good to see you. Maybe I'll see you in back in New Orleans.
I'll be down the 7th or 8th
with Willie. Yeah. Okay, that'd be great. All right, well,
maybe go see Mac, see how he's doing.
That would be great. We should. So, all right, man.
Great, thank you.
Thank you, Mickey. All right, everybody, thanks for hanging in there if you're still here. And you are listening to there's the track that Mickey and I did together one time. That was just a little run through of a
We just kind of made it up on the spot, but maybe he'll finish it one day. Anyway, thanks for listening. I love all your comments. Please leave me a good rating on iTunes and let me know about the t-shirt idea. And see you out there on the road. Take care.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.